Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Writer's Lounge. This is show number 53. This is August 19th, 2013, and this is our anniversary show. This is our second anniversary, so happy anniversary to us at the Writer's Lounge and everybody else out there who's either been on the show or listens to the show. Glad to have had you all over the last 24 months, so that's what it is. This is a show where, of course, we showcase new authors, and I am your host, Tom Riddell. And shortly, I'll bring on the ever-evescent and interesting and intelligent Robin Eduardo, and she has a tip for campers out there, and we'll be listening to her talk about that shortly in a brief intro to today's show. We will bring on Jeff Gafford, I hope I pronounced that name right, and he wrote Summertown, a neat little story, kind of a Mayberry RFD kind of story that you'll find very interesting, a little bit of a darker take than Mayberry RFD that you're a witness to or you have listened to in the past. And, of course, if you want to find us, the Writer's Lounge blog over at tomridell.com/blog. Go over there and read the reviews that I've written over the last 2 years. And in the upper left-hand corner, you can look and find the Blog Talk Radio player, and you can click on each author and listen to the show while you read the review. So get on over there, and of course, we are on Facebook. Look for us on Facebook, and you can click on the link over at the Blog Talk Radio site. We are also on Twitter, so go ahead and follow us over there at Twitter, and you can contact us the old-fashioned way at twl11@yahoo.com. And upcoming guest authors, next show, September 2nd, we're taking a break, as that is Labor Day, and we'll be bringing on September 16th a returning author by the name of Dawn Whidden, and she wrote Faceless, and she'll be on to join us once again on the Writer's Lounge. And, of course, I have to plug the Magic Pen Web Design over there at magicpenwebdesign.com. It offers its clients a simple, effective, and affordable approach to website design development. Get on over there and fill out the free estimate form over at Magic Pen Design, Web Design. I can't even talk right. Second anniversary show, and I can't even spit the words out. And let Magic Pen help you to sell that next book with a website design that works its magics for you. And call our instructions today. If you'd like to talk to Jeff, who will be on shortly at quarter after the hour, you can give us a call at 626-213-5613 or toll-free at 877-878-1436. And now we bring on Robin Eduardo. I already introduced you in the beginning, so I don't feel that I have to do that again, but you are intelligent, and you have a story for us. And I want to get right to it. I want to let everybody know that summer is winding down, and I was able to get up to my camp up at Mille Lacs Lake in northern Minnesota. And I had a camper up there for the summer, and I was up there probably 8 to 9 times, so I really enjoyed it. And sat around the campfire there and roasted marshmallows and told a few stories and just enjoyed ourselves up there underneath the stars and in that wonderful expanse of water that's one of the biggest lakes in Minnesota. But as we were talking, I think last show, Robin, you had mentioned some of the little tricks that are out there as far as if you need to start a campfire. I do it the easy way. I use lighter fluid and newspaper and one of those, you know, those lighters that they give you that you can buy in the store. But you told me something else that you can use if you don't have those items with you. If you're stuck out in the woods and you're about to build a fire and you reach in your pocket or dig around and look in your purse, and what shall you find to start the fire? How can you do this? What's in your purse?
See, this is what I love. This is what I love about you is because you actually say, you know, looking in a purse when you go camping. I love you so much, Tom. You crack
me up. It's kind of like, you just watched Let's Make a Deal when they come up to you, Monty Hall says, what you got in your purse? Well, you have in your purse, Robin, tell everybody what you found in your purse.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm a big fan of post-apocalyptic fiction, so in my mind, zombies can happen at any moment, so you need to be prepared, or any other, you know, scenario where you might need to be prepared for a disaster. And, you know, with Hurricane Sandy going on last fall, I mean, you understand, you know, what I went through. Some of these tips kind of come in handy, so I laugh about it, we joke about it when we're talking, but let's just say you need to make a fire for whatever reason, and we talked about the whole 9-volt, the 9-volt battery and the steel wool trick the last show. Well, now we're going to reach in our pockets or in our wallet.
Yeah.
Some men keep it in their wallet or their back pocket. Maybe they're really ready. Maybe they're really ready to start a fire, if you know what I mean. Wink, wink.
that little round circle that forms on the outside of your wallet. That
exactly. Yes, you could start a fire with a condom and some water. How about that? Sounds funny, right? Okay, so what it is basically you're following the same concept as using a convex lens or like a magnifying glass, or even your own eyeglasses can be used. But this is just another play upon that same idea. And basically what you do is you fill the condom with some water, and you force the water down all the way to the bottom of the condom to make it as round a ball as you can and twist it off, tie it into a knot. And then what you want to do is you want to get your tinder ready. And your tinder, I can tell you, you could probably scavenge some dry leaves, but the best thing you could do is get a hold of some cattails along the river or lake's edge or the roadside banks, those cattails. You rip them open, and that fluffy stuff that's inside of the cattails, perfect tinder. Or you could use your cotton balls dipped in Vaseline. That starts up really nice. But anyway, what you want to do is you want to take your condom filled with water ball thing, and you want to
I got my condom in my hand now there, Robin. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, get ready. Fill it with water, tie it off into a knot, make your ball. Find yourself a nice beam of sunlight. Get your tinder ready and your kindling, and, you know, all your fire-making material should be gathered together. Obviously, you're not going to get it together after you're already trying to make the fire. But you want to have your tinder ready, and you want to focus a beam of the sunlight through the ball, through the water.
Okay.
Even if you have to manipulate it with your hand, squeeze it a little to kind of catch that beam of light just right. I know it sounds funny, but bear with me. Catch the light just right. And remember when you were a kid and you used to fry ants on the sidewalk with that magnifying glass? You're doing the same thing. You want to catch that pinpoint beam of light. And hopefully, if you do it correctly, you can actually get it to that pinpoint beam of light will catch the tinder. You'll see it smoking, and you want to kind of encourage it and keep it going and blow on it softly, softly to give that oxygen to feed the flame and you know, throw other, you know, tinder and then the rest and build your fire up as if the same way you would build any other fire. But the point is you can actually get a flame started using a condom and water.
Cool. And then
I need applause.
And then
I need applause.
And then, And then afterwards, you can use the condom, right?
No, it's already, it's already been tied off in a knot. I don't know how you're going to...
Oh.
Whatever. Oh. But that's a different fire, Tom, and I don't know what kind of camping you're doing, but... The whole idea is to think outside of the box, to think outside of the box, and try to use materials that you know, people have done this before. People have used magnifying glasses. You do understand the concept, so you just kind of apply it to other things, and it does work. I've actually seen people use ice, make ice, and use it as a convex lens. Yeah, so it's the same principle, and it does work. I've seen there's videos on YouTube if you want to look it up.
It's all about survival, to be serious. I think everybody
absolutely
should consider that, because in the modern times that we live in, we don't really have our thinking caps on enough. Everything is provided for us, microwave dinners and all the other good stuff that we've been accustomed to here in the new age of 2000s. Of course, if we were living in the 1800s, it'd be a little bit different story. Of course, we wouldn't be on the radio talking about it right here, but that's interesting. What I would like to talk
about... Yeah, I
follow
a lot of doomsday... I'm sorry. I follow a lot of the doomsday prepper blogs. It's very interesting. Some of it's a little kooky and out there, in my opinion, but they do offer a lot of that old-time advice that our grandparents and great-grandparents... that they used, that people, technology that was used during the turn of the century, before we had all the modern conveniences. It really wasn't all that long ago that we were living a little bit more rugged. So, you know, maybe we are getting a little soft in these days, but I think it's something that we should consider definitely in appreciating and kind of practicing these skills. And you're lucky you have that camper and that you could go away camping and maybe try to practice these things.
Yeah, I will next time, I promise. the next topic, which we're going to have to work quick here and get through, I want to talk to you about your little escape to a little convention that you went to. But I was listening to the NPR, Minnesota Public Radio, the other day, and this is something for food for thought. We won't talk a lot about it, but just think about this, folks. If you're out there writing your book, imagine up on a stage storytelling your book, and imagine the audience members reacting to your words as you write and book out among the audience. This author was talking about this, and it really perked my interest because she takes those reactions that you don't usually get when you're writing, and she placed it into her writing afterwards. In other words, you pay attention to what gets the O's and what gets the ah's and what gets the laughs and what gets the frowns or the smiles. So you work on that reaction from your audience. So if you don't have stage fright, which I do, you can get out there and maybe, you know, tell your story or whatever. But real quick, Robin, then we'll bring on Jeff, but tell us a little bit about your convention that you went to.
Oh, yeah, I went to the Monster Mania convention in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. It was their 10th anniversary. They had George Romero, the King of Zombies, of course, Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead, all of the dead movies, the zombie films, King of everything zombie. So I got to meet him. That was really, really like... the epic thing of my life to be able to finally shake his hand and talk to him. And I was so nervous, but it was a lifelong dream. So that was great. And then also they had Carrie Fisher from Star Wars. She played Princess Leia.
Yes.
So and she's so nice. She's a little bit of a wackadoo though. She was sprinkling. Well, she was dipping her hands in glitter and she was touching her fans' faces or their foreheads, or their neck, or just touching them, at very personable as she's talking to them. But she's placing this, what she was calling it, was stardust on her fans, each one as she met them. So that was nice, because you knew which fans got to meet her, because they had the glitter. It was very crazy, crowded. It's a huge convention. It was a lot of fun. They had Malcolm McDowell. They had... Oh, my goodness. There's so many stars. I could go on and on, but we really don't have the time to go into it too much.
Nope.
But it was a lot of fun, and I have pictures up on my Facebook you'll have to check out later on.
Very good. And that sounded like a lot of fun. And now
it's
the main event, and Summertown was written by Jeff Gafford and published by Amazon Digital Services in 2012, and you may purchase it over at Amazon.com Kindle, and you can visit the author on Facebook. Summertown is a quiet, friendly little village where everyone knows everyone else, and the latest gossip is shared at the local coffee shop. When the Stone and Shirazi families have a wedding, the whole town turns out for a reception no one will forget. When someone speculates which girl might catch the eye of a handsome single young deputy marshal, everyone places their bet in a town-wide pool. But we soon discover that even the quietest of places can hold ugly secrets, and Summertown has a deadly one. And that's what Amazon wrote in their review, and this is what I wrote in my review. Jimmy Stone is a lot like a lot of Americans in small-town America, tries to raise a family in modern-day life, and things always seem to get in the way. As the story starts, the thing that almost ends that life is a bullet. Jimmy takes us through the story of his life in Summertown while he hovers close to death. Filled with humor and blunt honesty about his life and his ex-wife, Corinda, Jimmy weaves us through several relationships and the struggles and challenges that the people of Summertown encounter. But there is something sinister lurking, which is a product of Summertown's history, and it's a secret that will deliver dire consequences. The author delivers a well-written story, which is filled with interest, and the curiosity of the tale only increases as the pages turn. Each author has his or her forte. Mr. Gafford's strength as a writer comes with his ability to give a rich and colorful personality to his characters. Well-developed and interesting, the characters hold the reader to the very last page. And with that, I'd like to bring on to the Writer's Lounge, Jeff Gafford. Jeff, did I pronounce your name right?
Yes, you did. Thank you. My name is Jeff
Very
Gafford.
Good. How you doing tonight?
Good to meet you at last. So far,
yes,
I'm doing just fine.
Where are you calling from on this fine summer evening?
I'm calling from Chandler, Arizona on this fine evening. Well, the light's still out
over
here.
Okay. A little warm down there, I would imagine.
A little toasty, yeah.
A little toasty. Dry cold.
It's a dry heat. I used to live out in East Mesa, so I know.
Yeah, dry heat.
I know.
You know, it's compared to most of the U.S., at least to your area especially, it may be dry comparatively, but the temperature makes the bit of moisture, we call it the monsoon, because that little bit of moisture that shows up, it just superheats it until it's just miserable. But, it wasn't as bad in summer as far as I'm concerned as it has been. So I can survive.
Very good.
We still got air. We're all right.
Very good. And speaking of summer, your book is Summertown. And could you read an excerpt from your book, Jeff?
Can I? Well, I expect I can.
Okay.
May I preface it a little bit? Okay.
Sure.
This is early in the book, and Jimmy has an ex-wife by the name of Corinda, who we met basically was going to be a one-night stand. It lasted 20 years, and now they've been divorced for a few, and she left him for a security guard from Walmart, and now he's decided to leave, and so... Here, I'm just going to get to the scene in which she tells him from his office, at his office, that by phone, that Corinda's left and she's upset about it. I walked into the office and found Carol on the phone, my secretary, speaking soothing words of comfort. And I assumed it was Corinda with her usual load of horse hockey. But this time, Corinda waved me over to her desk and handed me the phone, something she knew not to do if it was my ex-wife on the other end. I took the phone reluctantly, seeing the look of sympathy on Carol's face, when I said hello, Corinda wailed and blubbered something in Spanish, and then through all the sniffling and bawling and more blubbering, I managed to piece together what the new disaster was. Nerville had left her. No way, I thought. This man was my hero, the one who had excised the cancerous tumor for my life. It can't be. Wait a minute, I interrupted, hoping against hope. Check the refrigerator. Check the kitchen cabinets. Are the Shasta and the Goo Goo clusters gone? I already thought of that, she barked at me. That was the first thing I did when I saw all of his movies gone. All of his snacks and drinks are gone. He even took the portrait we had made. She wailed this last part so loud I had to pull the phone away from my ear. What portrait, I asked, which sparked another string of Spanish epithets. I always assume that when Corinda speaks to me, it's something profane, ending in estupido, which didn't require a Spanish-English dictionary to translate. Our magic land portrait. We had somebody take our picture when we were going into the floating teacup ride. It was so romantic. Okay, I know it was a horrible thing, given the woman's emotional state, but the thought of those two inside one of those little cup-shaped kitty cars, their thighs oozing out the sides, flashing their pearly whites, all three of them in Nerville's case, it just got the better of me. I burst into laughter, and I couldn't stop. Corinda screamed a fresh string of Spanish at me and then hung up in my ear. Oh, Jimmy, that was not kind, Carol shook her head reprovingly. You two may have had your differences, but she is your daughter. She is your daughter's mother, and she needs your help. My help, I replied defensively. She left me, remember? She's been perfectly happy living with a toothless wonder the last few years, only seeing Jesse when it was a chance to play doting mother in front of an audience. You should have seen her at Jesse's graduation. The only way Jesse managed to free herself from Corinda's iron grip was to point out the honor guard at the other end of the field. The woman almost slipped on her own drool running over there. Well, then, Corinda paused a moment. Think of who she's going to call next. Do you think Jesse should have to worry about her mother when she has so much happening with the wedding? I hated to admit it, but Carol was right. Jesse was the next person on Corinda's list of torture victims, and worst of all, Jesse was bilingual, so she didn't have the luxury of tuning out half of what her mother said like I could. I didn't want her having to put up with that right now. Oh, all right, I relented, but only for Jesse. The woman hasn't called me in 2 years, not that I'm complaining about that, and suddenly I'm supposed to be taking care of her problems? When the only reply I got was one of her, now, Jimmy, you're better than that looks, I retreated to my office where I grudgingly picked up the phone and called Corinda. She spent only a few seconds berating me before getting to the point, which told me how upset she was. Oh, Jimmy, she said plaintively, it's so hard being alone. You don't know what it's like. You've been alone for, what, 3 hours? You didn't even know it until a few minutes ago. I was alone for a year before I met Corinda. Huh. Mentioning Tara caused a sudden chill in Corinda that I could feel right through the phone. Well, she resumed, I can't be alone that long. If I lose my nerve, I don't know what I'll do. I don't trust myself. I can't be alone. She was starting in with the melodrama, and I really didn't have time for it, so I cut her off. Corinda, don't worry. You'll find somebody else. In fact, I'm sure you could find someone better. Okay, that last part was redundant. What could possibly be worse than Nerville? Oh, I don't know, she said, hesitating. Do you really think I can attract a man? Okay, Lord, I'll go to confession right after this one. Sure I do. You're an attractive woman, to anyone who's drunk enough, with lots of personalities. Multiple personalities is more like it. Just relax and leave it in God's hands, and may he have mercy on every man you come in contact with. She sighed, paused, and said, you're right, of course. I just have to go out and let myself be seen again. In my mind, I heard a gavel strike and a judge's voice convicting me of being an accessory to crimes against humanity. Absolutely, I'm going to hell. There are plenty of good men out there, and if they're smart, they'll see you and come and run and for their lives. You're still young. Straight to hell, no detours. Go out and have fun. I extricated myself while I could. Gotta go, Corinda. Lots of monkeys to do. Bye. Put the phone down before she could reply and walked out the front door.
Very good. Interesting people in your story, Jeff. In the people in the setting in your story, as I read through it, had me thinking a lot, as I said at the beginning of the show, a lot like Mayberry, kind of a feeling to it. But I'm always interested in what the authors that write the story or the writers before their authors how they conceive of the story, and how long did it take you before you got it down on paper? How did it take us from the first point of conceiving the story, and then how long before you actually wrote it?
Well, I conceived it while I was writing a very, well, honestly, a poor short story. It's centered on the first three characters, which were Jimmy, Corinda, and Kara. Corinda being Jimmy's ex-wife, Kara being his current wife. It was really kind of a silly story that I never showed anyone but family and friends, and I wish I hadn't done that. But as I wrote it, I found that I really liked the people I'd created, and I started imagining where they lived. You know, I thought about, this is a town that I'd really like to live in. And I'd put it in northern Arizona in the middle of the forest because I love that area. I went to college back there, and in the Flagstaff area. I guess it seems kind of like Mayberry because, like a lot of folks in my generation, that's the dream town. You know,
yeah.
Place I'd love to live, that kind of a town, live out my days in. And, well, finally kind of just leaked out all over the story, I suppose.
Very good. Robin, you got any questions?
Yeah, and I can kind of understand what he's saying, having lived out there. There's certain areas. I know when the last time I was out there, last autumn, I went to Sedona. And it's the same, I mean, when you take the touristy part of it aside, you know, when you go more towards the northern part of Arizona, there's like that sleepy town, small town
yeah.
feel, and it does have that Mayberry feeling to it, and there are people that are characters, and I did enjoy your reading, by the way, because you were playing out each character. It was really nice to kind of hear the, I don't know, like you infused personalities into each character as you were reading them, so that was kind of cool.
Thanks.
And also, I'm a lot like Nerville because I'm a security professional, and I know that Jeff is too, and that's something I haven't shared with Jeff, but we have a lot in common over the course of 30 years. So I thought that was pretty interesting, and that's pretty much the way it is with some of the contract security folks that are out there. The kind of character you got would be Nerville.
Yeah.
Hey, we've got a caller here from the floor. I'm not going to give the phone number all away here, but we do have a phone call coming from the 480 area code. You want to get to as many callers as possible, so let's bring on that caller now. And caller, you are on the Writer's Lounge with Tom Rydell and Robin Eduardo and Jeff Gafford. Can you hear us?
Jeff, how's it going?
Hello.
This is Eric.
Eric. Hi.
Hey, how's it going?
Nice talking to you, Eric. You can go ahead and hang up now, Tom.
I actually had a question for you because I've read Summertown a couple times, and I just want to know how you create your characters. I mean, are they based off of the characteristics of people you know, or is it just something you came up with?
Some of them are composites of characters. Most of them are composites of characters that I've known. One fellow you and I used to work with, a lot of the Marshall's character is built on him. So we used to work with. There's no one who's actually 100% any given character, but there are certain really high points, like the character of Gary. He's a bit of a slight exaggeration of two different guys I used to work with. They're... for instance, those who haven't read it, he writes a list. What list, you'll find out. But he writes a list, and this young fellow wrote a list of qualifications, and he carried around with him, and things like that. But by and large, as I'm writing the story, I realize, well, this person would fit right in here. And it just kind of... I wouldn't say it all flowed, because it didn't all flow well, but the basic story idea, what if something like this happened in a little town like this, how it would work out, that pretty much came out pretty easily. The characters, I like doing characters. They're fun. And I don't know why, but they seems that they're fairly easy for me. It's just one of those things that kind of pops into my head. Maybe it's because I'm so old and I met so many people that from memory I can these kind of mold and take shape on the paper, on the screen.
Very cool. Is there a Summertown sequel in the future?
Why, yes, Mr. Ekstrom, there is. And it is titled Casting Stones. I'm in the ending stages of getting that together. There is a sequel, and it brings us to more than just Summertown. It spreads over to the Caribbean, and has a bit to do with Jimmy's backstory.
Cool.
So
awesome. Well, we look forward to it.
Thank you, sir.
All right. You guys have a good night.
Thank you very
too.
Much.
Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay, was that, I should have asked the caller, but did you say Ekstrom? Is that Eric Ekstrom?
Mr. Eric Ekstrom, the author of the...
All right. Well, he's one of our alumni, and he'll be on again at some point here, I think in November. I just got him plugged in. So I didn't realize who that was.
We love Eric.
Yeah. Eric. Of course.
Yeah, as a matter of fact,
Eric.
he's one of the motivating forces in the book. He and my wife, of course, she and I were dating when I was about halfway through the manuscript, and she read half of it, and she pushed me to complete it, and Eric kind of pushed me to publish it. And that's why it's published with Vigilante Publishing Group, which is his publishing group as well. As a matter of fact, we've decided to partner up and take over that name, and we're going to be doing a grand opening pretty soon for the company next month.
Wow, very nice.
Thank you.
So congratulations. That's nice.
That's really
good. Eric is a really nice guy, too. I love him so much. So, yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
He writes the Everett Holmes stories, and we really appreciate those stories a lot. I had a little bit of a technical problem on my end here. I lost you guys for a second, and hopefully on the playback it'll be fine, which usually it is. But, Jeff, what I wanted to do is ask you, once again, I think you just touched on it about your background in security and wondering, obviously, that from that profession you pulled a lot of interesting stories and a lot of interesting characters. But did you have to do any research to write Summertown other than just in your own mind?
I did a little bit. I picked out the area. I drove up to where Summertown is in my mind. I picked it up, and I said, this is perfect. This is Summertown. And I picked it up while my wife and I were dating still, and we drove up there together. And in my mind, I plotted out, this is where the garage is. This is where the post office is. That's where the cafe is, where everything happened. And... where all the conversation takes place. So, yeah, I did that research. I also just had to verify certain things, like a medical issue, how it could take place. I had to rewrite something because I wrote it incorrectly. But I didn't have to do very much because, as I said, I've gone up there often enough, and I used to go to school there back in the 80s, of course, back in the Stone Ages, but... I grew up going up there with my folks so we could cool off in the summer. But, yeah, a few ways I had to do some research.
Did you actually draw the town that you wrote about on, like, a map or anything?
No,
or how
I
did
have
you do
not.
That?
However, that's going to be I won't promise, but it's likely going to be part of the one of the pages in the new book.
Oh, I would like that.
That would be very interesting because you know how like in the beginning of Game of Thrones, the television series, and they, you know, in the opening they show the map and all the different kingdoms and locations. So in a different but similar way, you could actually have a map of Summertown and the locations of all the different, you know, events that that take place in the story. So I always found stuff like that pretty interesting. Yeah, that would be cool.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah, I was thinking about those characters.
Of all the characters in Summertown, which is the one that's most like you in real life?
Well, I'm certainly not going to say I am kind of reluctant to pick a particular one, but as far as the general take on life and the way he'll put his foot in his mouth every once in a while, that Jimmy really is more like, but he is a much better man than I am. Even with all his faults, he's a better man than I am. That's what one of the things I wrote into the character is. He's much more thoughtful than I am, I'm ashamed to say. But he does have the anger streak that I have. Overall, his sarcasm he's probably more like me than the others.
Yeah, you draw a little bit of every, little of real life, you know, of your own life, I should say. You're infusing a little bit of that into each one of your characters because that's what's your failure, so.
And I do add some of the anecdotes that things that I've done that happened to me in there, and which I've found can now say are humorous,
That's what makes it more relatable to the reader anyway, so that's good.
Yeah, I'm hoping that. Thank you.
It's very exciting when a writer finally gets his first book out there, and Jeff, you must have felt pretty excited when you became an author. How did you feel when that happened to you, and is there anything about Summertown that you would change if you could do it?
Well, yeah, it was pretty exciting. It was more exciting than I thought it would be. You know, I took a picture of the first book out of the box, posted it on my Facebook page, and then what would I change? Well, maybe, just maybe, adding a little more backstory on Jesse. But in the next book, you'll get to know her a little bit more.
Is that something that came after you wrote? In other words, did you have people referring to that character and liking that character so much that you decided, or you wish that you had given more of a backstory on him, or did it just occur to you after you wrote it?
Well, Jessie is Jimmy's daughter, and no, I just because Jessie is so important to Jimmy's character that I think I probably should have given a little bit more backstory in the first book. I rectified that in large part by going into some. For instance, you're growing up in the second book. But,
that's
good. But overall, that wasn't really a large thing. I don't think. I'm thankful that you enjoyed the story without that backstory for Jessica.
Mm-hmm. And it's always good to get a little feedback, too, from your fans, readers, for things that they consider. Characters, I'd like to hear a little bit more about this one, and how about what happened here, and then you could always go back in your sequels and tie up any loose strings that way too. So it's good that you did revisit that and try to flesh her story out a little bit more in the follow-up. So good for you.
Yeah, in the beginning of the show, Jeff, we talked a little bit about reading your book in front of a group of people, like a regular storyteller would do to get a reaction from the audience. And the thing about your book that gave me a lot of chuckles that you probably would have been interested to hear from, and I say hear from because you don't hear from your readers when they're reading it, but I laughed quite a few times during those first couple of pages when you were describing Corinda. and her odd kind of ways. And I find that interesting, once again, if you can get feedback on some of those major mm-hmm. points in your book that actually draw the reader in, which would be humor is a wonderful tool mm-hmm. to use to bring in the readers at
Agreed.
The beginning of a story. So I thought that was really good. And where do you go to write, Jeff, and how do you get yourself in the mood to write?
Well, sometimes I can actually sit still at home in the living room and type away, look out the window, but more often than not, if I'm looking down to other than work, I'll run down to a coffee shop somewhere and just
mm-hmm.
the general atmospheric sounds, even if it's kind of loud, I'm able to just tune that out. At home, I don't mm-hmm. really tune sounds out, but if I go to a local Starbucks or something like that, it's easier for me to write then. I usually get a whole lot more writing done.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's
it's
interesting.
Like white noise in the background,
yeah.
and you just tune it out. And but the thing is you're generally not being interrupted, where at home you are always
yeah.
being interrupted by life. So,
yeah
sometimes
yeah,
it is
sure
good
am.
To get
yeah.
out.
Or I'm expecting to be interrupted, so it kind of
right
in the back of your
so
mind.
It's hard to get into the mood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's hard to free
yeah.
your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'd like to take a survey sometime, Robin, and a number of authors on the show here that would write in public or write in private, and how many of them do
yeah.
That. It would be interesting to see. I would guess probably the majority of them like private, like I do.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
There are a few really good writers out there who will immerse themselves in a cafe or a coffee shop.
Absolutely.
I know one local author who does that. Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
How has your family and friends reacted to your writing when you told them you were going to be an author?
Well, when I told them, I never actually came out and said, I'm going to be an author. I just told them I was writing stories. And you wanted to read this one, and wanted to read that one, and one of them kind of caught my mom off guard. I was raised, my siblings, we were all raised very conservative, dedicated Christians. And
mm-hmm.
I am still. I'm still a Christian. I haven't walked away from that faith. My mother is old-fashioned dedicated Christian, so when some things I write, she's put off a little bit by them.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I wrote one short story entitled Tara, it's in my short story, my sixth story collection called Take a Peek at My Shorts. The story entitled Tara, which is the second short story I wrote, set with the from one of the Summertown characters. At first she encouraged me, "Why don't you write something that has Christian values? And you can do that. You can really write." Okay, I'll. I kind of drew myself into writing this one. I kind of got sidetracked and started writing this one. So she read it, and about two pages in, she handed that back to me. Says, "I didn't. You didn't write what I thought you were going to do," and she walked away. And so
how do you deal with that when that happens? What do you do? What happens inside your mind when that happens? Do you shut down or do you decide to continue anyway?
Oh, I continue anyway. I'm not a young man. I'm 51. And so if my mom doesn't like it, well, I better doggone well deal with it or go find therapy or something. So she understands, and she's encouraging me about writing. She encourages me about writing, even though I don't write exactly what she wants all the time. She's encouraging me about it. She asks me about it. And my wife definitely does. But, my friends in general are very encouraging. And that's one big plus that I know there are a lot of people that don't have that, and I'm thankful for that.
Mm-hmm.
That even if my writing flat out sucks, they won't come out and say, "Man, this story sucks."
Uh-huh.
But I can tell. I can tell them. The story sucks.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise,
I'd rather have them be strictly honest with me and tell me it sucks rather than having them beat around the bush. That's how I would like that to be. And I've actually had a few reviews of my work where they said it sucks. So that's the
difficulty. But I understand also with your in regard to your family, though, because I know I had my grandma, Mogi. She was pretty hardcore Christian, prayed at every meal, and I mean, we couldn't call even our own children or each other brats. That was a cuss word, brat. You would get a slap across the mouth for calling somebody a brat. So I kind of understand, you know, what it's like to be a little bit when you're dealing with people who they're supportive. So I do get that. They're supportive, and you need that. And they're willing to say, well, this isn't quite my cup of tea, but they're gonna still back you up and encourage you when you know in your endeavors. Yeah. And that's really great that you have that.
That's pretty cool when that happens. And, Jeff, I know that obviously to write this book, it's been probably a pretty long process for you, but writing it is just part of the process. And what I'd like to ask you about now would be how did the publishing process work for you or against you, and what advice do you have for other writers, authors out there?
Well, let me see. Got a half an hour? Let's see. I think the traditional publishing process is very nice to me in that the rejection letters were very graciously worded. Very nice. But since it doesn't fit any particular genre, I think that was a large part of it. I'm you know, cushioning my ego by saying it doesn't fit in a genre, that's the reason why they didn't take it. Yeah, that's it. But, you know, it doesn't fit into a particular genre, just general fiction. Can't really put in, and genres are a big part of traditional publishing because it's the best finding a market for it. You know, they really aren't in, I don't think, the publishing business as much as they are in the book sales business. If they can't sell a book, you know, and you can't fault them for that because if they just go and take chances on books all the time, you can plan on them filing bankruptcy pretty soon. So
conversely, you have to also realize that rejection doesn't necessarily mean that your writing sucks. You know, it's like you said, if it just... It's a hard to place book. You could be rejected for that reason, no matter how well written it is or how great the story is.
Yeah.
So you make a good point there.
And so, like I said, I don't really fault them much. And smaller houses are, I think the smaller houses are equally restrained for that reason because their budget isn't big enough to be able to afford too many gambles.
To take the risk, right.
Exactly. But there are some out there, and I really salute them for doing that. It does take some courage to let go of some of your very hard-earned cash to take a chance on a book. Boy, this is where Eric Ekstrom, he had a imprint by the name of Vigilante Publishing. And he encouraged me, and he permitted me to self-publish, and he guided me through the whole process. You know, make sure you've got a good proofreader. Try to find an editor. Mm-hmm. Well, the editors I couldn't possibly afford, in all honesty. Editors are very expensive. The editor themselves may not be particularly expensive, but the price adds up after you're going over 200 pages.
Per page,
you charge per page. And he suggested a terrific proofreader by the name of Anita Berry. And she covered things. You know, I'd gone over my story. My wife had gone over my story, and a couple other friends had, with a fine-tooth comb. Anita took it, and 2 weeks later, I had red marks all over the sheet. she didn't miss anything, and she made some suggestions about it, about the story and things. So she was just fantastic. And
great.
And if not for that, I would have been in trouble. And I got a a good formatter and a good cover designer. But the second printing I put out is, I should call it the second printing, but I just, you know, second go around. the first one was not the best cover in the world, but people insist that it wasn't a bad one. But the current cover was done by a professional cover artist. So that's pretty much where my advice are. Here's my advice. Don't show your books to anybody until you're finished. Because for a reason, you know, you have to rewrite it anyway. So don't show it to anybody if you aren't done with it. Finish it. I mean, even if it's in the first edition, you've blown up. Then you want to give it to somebody, so they at least see the whole story. You know you're going to rewrite it anyway, so you don't have to worry about that. But if you show it to anybody in the middle of your writing, it's just going to slow you down, and somebody else's thoughts are going to affect yours, and it'll become less and less your story. Mm-hmm. And another one is don't skip over the step of sending your work to a good proofreader, what I just mentioned. You just have to do that. There's so many people who don't get really proofread. They think you get somebody who's kind of good at English, that their cousin's real good at English, and they'll do it. Get a professional proofreader.
I had my sister read it, and she said it was good, so I went ahead and published it.
Yeah.
I see a lot of that. And then they already have it published, and then post it for critique and ask others, well, what do you think? And then they get upset when they receive negative critique. You've already published it. But it's better to have somebody help you in the process than to put it out there for public consumption and having the wolves tear it apart, because that is what's going to happen.
That's true. Yeah, and the second one, which I could, again, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Jeff.
But a thing is, an editor is a big thing too, and there are lots of people out there who say they're editors, but they really aren't. They may be good formatters or something, but editing is a skill in and of itself, and it is absolutely critical if you can possibly afford it. You know, if you've got the money for it, consider it an essential thing. Get a real reputable editor, because it's going to change the way your structures, the way your story comes out. It's just going to come out shining 100% better if it's edited. At least get a high quality spell proofreader, and if you can't find one, don't publish it until you can find one. And then cover artists, because the cover art can be expensive, but they're not all expensive. And some of these cover artists, freelancers, they'll crank it out for you. Don't just use a template. Get a good cover artist who can design it, because that really is the first thing a buyer's going to look at.
And there's a lot out there. There really is a lot. I agree with you about the money. The focus should be on the editing. That's number one. An unedited book will kill you dead in the water right there. You could just kiss your book sales goodbye. And a good cover, like you said, that's the number two, because that's what's going to draw in your readers, their interest, because they see it and it's like, oh, that's something I might be interested in. Then they read the blurb and all that. So I agree with you. There's a lot that goes into it.
I think the writing process is part of it. And once again, the work starts. And I've had other writers, authors come to me. In fact, I was talking to a friend of mine the other day, and he had published two books, and we were talking about that. But the real work starts after you write it, after you've published it and gotten it out there. You really have to work on promoting it. You have to work. If you're self-publishing it, you really got to do your work. Don't think that you're done. You're not done. You've got a lot of work
to
do.
It's a business, and you have to treat it like a business.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
and Jeff, I think
that
is important to keep in mind, that everybody out there, pay attention to that and do your research. Look around for a good editor. look around for a good cover artist and do your homework. We're kind of winding down here, Jeff. We only got a little over 4 minutes left here, and I would like for you to tell everybody where you can be found out on the internet.
Well, you can find me at, I've got a radio show, a Blog Talk radio show, much like yours, Tom. It's entitled A Lone Writer.
I'm familiar with that, yes. Writer.
Yeah, and we talk, I really love you both, but, if only one of you can make it, that's fine, but I'd really like y'all to become a guest on my show sometime real soon.
Yeah, I'd love to do that.
Yeah, I'd love to have your insights. And so you can contact me through there. And also, my books can be found on Amazon. Just look it up. Under Jeff Gafford, I got a couple books out there right now. And you can contact me through my new website with my company, which is Vigilante Publishing Group, LLC.com. A mouthful, but run them all together and the website will pop right up. Vigilante Publishing Group, LLC.com. And my book, Eric's books, Jennifer O'Neill Gunn's books, and as well as another terrific writer by the name of Barbara Grosvenor, her books are soon to come out. And really looking forward to it. And I hope you'll forgive my making a commercial like plug over it, but
that's great.
We're going to be offering publishing services with packages, and also a few. We won't be able to put out very many, but per year, at least at the beginning. But a few traditionally published works we'd love to help with. But by and large, we're offering is really great, really reasonable priced packages. But yeah, that's the best way to contact me is through Vigilante Publishing Group, and just say the contact us page and say attention Jeff Gafford, and it'll get right to me.
Very good, Jeff.
Excellent.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you for being on the show, and good luck with your writing. Love Summertown. Look forward to another installment. And you have a good night, sir.
Thank you, sir. Very, very thankful to you that you had me on. And you all take care.
It was great talking to you.
Bye, Jeff.
Thanks.
All right, good night.
Okay, Robin, and I wanted to also get in a little bit of another plug here for us for our second anniversary show. Once again, I want to thank everybody out there who's contributed to the Writer's Lounge. We get a lot of listens. We usually get between 2,000 and 3,000 listens for an author after 2 weeks after the show is broadcast. So, go over there and take a look at the authors that we have had, the 53 that we have had on our show. And once again, we will continue this, and we will continue next time after a break. We will say goodbye to summer and look forward to fall by bringing on Dawn Whidden, wrote Faceless, and she'll be on September 16th. Until that time, I want to thank you once again, everybody. And Robin, say what you got to say. You've been a part of this show, too, and I really appreciate it. And it really warms the cockles of my heart. And I'm going to use the condom. I'm going to use a condom at the camp next time. I'll let you know how that works.
Okay, you let me know. It's been a lot of fun. It's been a great 2 years, and it's been a great show tonight, talking to Jeff and talking to you. And what I'd like to say to everybody is I hope for everybody to have great reading and good writing. Good night, everybody.
Good night, guys and gals. See you later. Thank you.
In the middle of the day, your faith and your fences been blown away. You're down in the cellar and you've locked yourself in. Ah, but it looks like it's rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind. And it looks like it's rainbow weather again. Morn. He said, Noah, get ready, for the sky will be torn. Build as I tell you, save what you can. Then wait while the rainbow weather begins. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Trouble will come, but trouble will go. You're living in fear, but what do you know? You know that the sun's always coming then. You know there'll be rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. The storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out. And it looks like it's rainbow weather. Yeah, it looks like it's rainbow weather again. The storm clouds apart and the sun peeking.